Welcome to the Organized 365 podcast. My name is Lisa Woodruff, and I'm a professional organizer and blogger in Cincinnati, Ohio. I want to help you get your home organized and help you organize life stages and unexpected events. So sit back, relax, and let's get organized. We're going to have story time today here on Organize 365. I am answering a reader email I got back in October from Deborah, and I'll read you her question in a minute. And I'm going to tell you about how when I turned 40, I changed my pursuit from that of money to that of time. We are always in this juxtaposition between time and money. And what we often feel like we need more of is money, but actually when you start prioritizing time, everything else falls into alignment. And I finally realized that's what I did in December 2011 and the beginning of 2012, but my journey didn't end, it hasn't ended, but I didn't really get that balance of time and money until last year. So I'm going to talk to you about my journey of personal fulfillment. And one of the things that I reflected on this last winter as everyone was on winter break was that I love podcasting. Like, I love it. I love listening to podcasts. I love producing podcasts. I love talking about podcasts. I love podcasts. And I was really trying to reflect on why I love podcasts so much. And I decided, because I don't have any demographic proof about this, but it just seems logical to me that what I have observed is actually true, and somebody could back it up with facts for me. I think that you listen to the Organize 365 podcast because you are on a journey of personal fulfillment and success. You are looking for personal development. You read audiobooks. You're always trying to do more, be more for the others around you. And that is, I think, unique to podcasts. Often people ask if I'll have a YouTube show or I should have a TV channel. And I've wanted a TV show for a long time. But every time I think about having a TV show, I go, oh my gosh, that would be so much work, because you have to be so physically perfect. And then you have to get the props. And then you have to have the time. It's just so much time and money to have a TV show that lasts 22 minutes plus commercials. And people who watch TV shows or YouTube channels are sitting and watching, whereas I'm 99% sure you are doing. You are driving, exercising, cleaning, cooking, working, caretaking, pretending to be sleeping. Yes, I listen to podcasts sometimes when I'm supposed to be sleeping. But you are growing your mindset. You are developing yourself personally so you can be more for yourself and the people around you. And I really realized, more so in the last year or two of Organize 365, that it's really not about organization. I mean, I'm going to keep talking about organization. I love organization. I just started a second organization podcast about paper so I could talk more about organization. But it's not about everybody being organized perfectly. It's about the fact that organization gives you time back. And when you have your time back, then you can live out the life that you were meant to live and be fulfilled. Okay, so I'm going to read Deborah's email, or parts of Deborah's email. And I'll skip a bit. She says, I recognize this inquiry isn't necessarily related to organization, but maybe it fits in the subsection of unexpected life events. I'm turning 30 in a year, and I've been really thinking about what makes up a good and well-lived life. Unfortunately, the people around me tend to operate in a frantic, under-organized, I don't have time for anything way. As such, while they do offer valuable insight, still, I'm also seeking advice and ideas from people whose lives I hope to emulate when I am their age. Oh my gosh, I'm going to be somebody's age. That's a freaky thought. You are a wonderful example of how I hope to be living life when I'm your age. Although you're super busy, you make time for the things you love and find important, and seem, at least from your podcasts and emails, to be really deeply satisfied with your life and where you are so far. And so then she says, will you please record a podcast and basically tell me how you did that? So this podcast is, how did I do that? And yes, I am deeply fulfilled. I am deeply fulfilled. I can finally say we are debt-free. But the journey started the year I was about to turn 40. And there are some milestone birthdays that we go through and some mental time shifts that we have that open this little window of opportunity for us to really be purposeful about how we spend our time and our money and make significant shifts in our life that will propel us through the next decade. So I think this is perfect timing. And I'm going to take you all the way back to when I was just about to turn 40. It was December 2011. I know I've shared this story before. I feel like I shared it really recently on the podcast too. But anyway, it's my story, so I'll share it again. I mean, I am sitting in my car right now driving home after having just resigned my teacher's position. I could feel how cold it was that day, how scared I was, how I thought this is crazy. First, you should know, my husband Greg is a saint. He is a saint. He never questions what I want to do. He literally gives me enough rope that I can hang myself. It's very rare that he says, okay, enough of that harebrained idea, we're doing this other thing. So almost anything I decide I want to do, he's like, whatever. He doesn't stand up and cheer and be like, this is great. I'm so glad you quit your job and we're in debt and we have no idea what we're going to do, but I support you. He does not do that. But he also does not say, this is crazy. You have to go get that job back. How are we going to pay the bills? He just doesn't say anything. And he just kind of lets me do my thing. So it was December 2011. We were in debt. We've been in debt a lot. Our kids have a lot of medical needs, but I don't really think it's even that. There is a correlation between time and money, and you're either pursuing time or you're pursuing money. And for the first couple decades of my life, I was pursuing money. And I'll be real honest with you. Before 2011, I had never earned more than $35,000 in a year. And I was a great income earner. I mean, that was fine for our family. And as the, you know, not the breadwinner, I was not the breadwinner in our family. I never wanted to be the breadwinner. I always wanted to be the stay-at-home mom. And mentally in my mind, I was a stay-at-home mom earning extra money until about 18 months ago. That was literally in my mindset of who I was and what I was and what my role was in our family. I think also when you listen to my story, I am a Gen X woman, and I do think the generation you are plays a part in how you look at time and money. So how Gen X women typically look at time and money is there is this delineation. Are you a stay-at-home mom or are you not a stay-at-home mom? Who is the breadwinner? Who isn't the breadwinner? Those are things that our generation tends to say. Millennials tend to look at everything much more 50-50, like we will parent the children together. Obviously, the woman still gives birth. The breadwinner can be a fluid thing. One person's the breadwinner one year, the next person is the breadwinner the next year. It's a back and forth, much of a sharing generation. Gen X is very much, in my estimation, our generation is, here's the expectation, pick the path you want, follow the path you're on. So it's December 2011. My kids were school age at that time, which is why I thought I could go back to a teaching job. I'd been in teaching for 18 months. I'd been in teaching because I was earning this side income that we needed in a lot of different ways. I literally had 9 Schedule C's on my tax return in 2011. I was tutoring, I was teaching at the school, I was cleaning houses, I was in 3 different direct sales companies. I mean, and all of these were separate Schedule C's on our tax return. And everyone made money. Like one made a couple $1,000s, another one made $20,000. Altogether, I think I made about $35,000 that year, which was nowhere near our expenses. Our expenses from, I think it was 2007 to 2013, something like that, 50% of our take-home pay went to bona fide medical deductible expenses on our tax return. Like our medical expenses were astronomical. I'm preaching to the choir here. Either you or someone in your family has been exactly in my situation. Medical expenses are the number one reason that people file bankruptcy in the United States. And it's very expensive if you have a medical condition. So that's where we were. It's December 2011, and my husband and I have been taking unpaid days off of work in December to meet our kids' needs. And my boss had me staying late for an impromptu meeting with the parent on a Thursday night before the holiday break on Friday. the meeting was completely unnecessary. I have thoughts about why the meeting happened, but anyway, it was unnecessary. And Greg had to leave work unpaid, take a couple more hours unpaid to cover me because I had to stay for this impromptu, completely unnecessary meeting. At the end of the meeting, I got yelled at because I said the meeting was unnecessary. And I got yelled at. And I'm in my car going, you're about to be 40 years old. You've just lost $100 of income because your husband had to take off work for you to go to this completely unnecessary political meeting. And then you were told that your idea was wrong. And then you were basically yelled at like you were a little kid in the principal's office. And I was like, you know what? This is ridiculous. I'm basically working for this school for free because I'm losing money for working for this school. And I'm being made to feel like I'm a 9-year-old kid who did something wrong. And for the record, I've never been in the principal's office. Like, I'm the goody two shoes. Like, I'm the one that is always trying to meet everybody's expectations so that I don't get in trouble, so that I do it right, so that everybody likes me. So whatever. And I'm driving home on this cold night and our kids were having some major medical issues at the time. And now we've lost even more money. And I'm like, you know what? I'm done with this. Like, I am so done with this. I am killing myself working. I was sleeping like 4 or 5 hours a night, which is not enough for me. Still working all these other part-time jobs. Nothing was working. My kids' health wasn't working. Our marriage was strained. Although, praise the Lord, our marriage has always been solid. It's the one, I mean, oh my gosh, what a blessing. We had a house. We had a line of credit that was great because we are Gen X. We're able to have credit. That is one thing that definitely helped us in the recession, I think, as a generation. Gen X had the jobs and we had credit. So we had credit cards. We were maxing them out, but we had credit. And I was like, all right, it is not working for me to work because everything is falling apart at home. And our marriage was getting rocky because eventually everything breaks, right? Everything eventually breaks. And I'm driving home. And I called my aunt, like I did not call my husband. I called my aunt and I said, I think I'm going to quit my job. And she goes, okay. And I was like, all right. So I'm thinking about how am I going to tell Greg that I'm going to quit my job? So I walk in the house Thursday night and I said, I'm quitting my job tomorrow. And he goes, all right, how's that going to work? And I said, I don't know. I'll find another direct sales company to represent or something. I'll make money. Don't worry. But I'm pretty sure I'm quitting my job tomorrow. He's like, all right. So I went upstairs, wrote the resignation letter, got to work Friday morning. This is party day. You know, you're in elementary school, party day, Christmas day. And the principal's door is locked. And I went into the office before I could lose my nerve. Oh my gosh, I'm sweating just thinking about it now. And I slid my resignation letter under the door and then walked down to my classroom and told my co-teacher, I said, I just quit my job. And I knew the door was locked, so she couldn't go get the letter and undo it. And I didn't want to leave the kids. I didn't want to leave my co-teacher. But I knew that I made the decision that night. Anyone could step in and teach these kids. Yes, it was going to be a disruption. Yes, it was going to mess up a couple of kids' middle school years. It was not going to be detrimental, lifelong, sitting on a therapy couch when they're 50. When I was in seventh grade, my math teacher decided to quit mid-year. Like, it was not going to be that detrimental. It maybe was going to be rocky for 6 months or whatever, but I wasn't irreparably damaging the children in my class. Who I was irreparably damaging were my own kids and my husband, because I was sacrificing everything to earn more money so that we could whatever. But what was happening was we had no time. Like the house, I wish I had pictures to show you because I know you don't believe me, but this house was a wreck. It was a complete wreck. Wow, this could be a long podcast. Okay, I'll try to skip a bit. So anyway, I had to work my 2 weeks and we had winter break. So it wasn't really until the end of January that I was truly home off work. And I'd already joined a direct sales company because that's what worked for me in the past. I could join a direct sales company and recruit and make money. And that isn't what happened in 2012. But that's how I started 2012. January 1st, 2012, I started the Organize 365 blog because I had been watching blogs. I had a blog before. And I come from a long line of entrepreneurs. My mother, my father, my grandfather, my great-grandfather, my great-grandmother, my grandmother, my grandmother. Like, I have a hard time thinking of someone in my direct lineage. I can't think of anyone in my direct lineage that was an employee. They employed people, but they were the owner. Like, they owned the businesses. And in almost every case, except for my father's case, they started the company from scratch. So not only did they own it, but they started it from scratch. So entrepreneurship was in my blood. And for the first, you know, 20 years after I'd been out of school, I had worked for someone else, or like on that Schedule C tax return, I did a bunch of household related tasks for people and owned my own company, but I didn't have any employees. So I made two decisions. I decided that number one, the most important thing in January 2012 was going to be time, not money. And number two, I wasn't going to work for anyone else anymore. I was going to work for myself. And my biggest dream always my entire life has been to be an employer, to employ people. I love to employ people. And as a direct salesperson, I didn't employ anyone, but I was very good at getting people to join companies and actually be profitable. It was very important to me that the people on my team set goals and that they were profitable, not that they went in debt. I had one downline that went in debt and I felt very responsible for that. And so I'm always, you know, I like to bless people's businesses and not cause debt, which is why I set up the Sunday Basket Workshop Certified Organizer Program the way I did. There are no minimums. There is no product requirement. There is no possibility of debt. It's all about providing service and earning money. Okay, so this, let me look at my notes for a minute. All right, so it's January 2012. I have to earn money. I remember very clearly, again, saying to St. Gregory, I understand that I need to earn money. I've joined this direct sales company. I've started this blog. Blogs take a while to make money. I didn't know it'd be 5 years, but blogs take a while to make money. I said, but we need this house to be organized. Like, the number one problem staring us in the face right now is that we are so, so unorganized. I had no idea what we had in our house anymore. I was buying things with money we didn't have to replace things I knew were in this house somewhere, but I had no idea where they were. And the reason our house was so disorganized was because for the last 18 months, I had literally been sleeping or working and just dumping things. And so had everybody else in the family. I mean, my kids were in grade school, but they weren't like, you know, well, anyway, kids, all you have to say is kids. And Greg makes no mess whatsoever, but he also doesn't clean up mess. So he was just functioning just fine, but the house was literally a hot mess. I came home from the grocery store. I had stocked up on some stuff I knew that we were low on. I don't know how I knew we were low on it because there was so much stuff in this house. I remember walking in the door. I could picture myself now walking in the door with these bags and trying to put them on the counter, but the counters were full. And if you have seen pictures of my kitchen, that's a ridiculous amount of counters to be full and not to be able to put grocery bags on. That's how bad the house was. So I put the bags on the floor thinking that's no big deal because I'll just put it away in the cabinets right away. So I brought everything in. I had all these grocery bags on the floor and I had stocked up because now I was back home. I don't know. I was going to make marshmallow Rice Krispie treats or something. And I started opening up all the cabinets and the pantry and the, you know, refrigerator. And there was no space. Like, I mean, no, you couldn't put a ketchup bottle in there. And I had just brought home all these groceries. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, I can't even put stuff away because everywhere I'm going to put stuff away is crammed full. So I left all the groceries on the floor and I got out a yellow legal pad and I sat down. I pushed everything away on my kitchen table and I sat down with this yellow legal pad and I just made a list. Okay, I need a plan. I need a plan. I'm going to lose my mind. If I could organize this entire house, how many spaces need to be organized? And I just started listing them, you know, like kid's bedroom, kid's closet, master bathroom, kitchen cabinets, kitchen drawers, what? And I had 40 areas and I was like, okay, this is the start of the blog. I'm going to organize these 40 places in 40 days. Wow. I mean, I was insane. I ate, slept, and breathed organizing my house, and I kept myself to that plan of organizing our entire house in 40 days. After I had finished it, I had decluttered about 30 to 40% of our house. I had a gigantic garage sale. I think I made a total of $600, but still, I had a garage sale. And I felt like our house was so much lighter. In retrospect, it wasn't organized at all. I did not organize my house at all that first time I went through my house like that. What I did was get rid of about 10 to 15 years worth of accumulation of stuff in our house that we no longer needed, used, or loved. I did not do any organizing. I only got rid of the stuff we didn't need. So often when you want to start the 100-day home organization program, you will say to me, but I need to declutter first. Yes, I need to declutter first, but I needed to declutter in an organized way. You can easily do the 100-day program just decluttering the first time through. So that worked pretty well. And in the fall, I felt like the house was lighter. At least I could put things away. But in the fall was when I realized it wasn't really organized. It was only decluttered. So I took those 40 days and I spread them out into 40 weeks. And I organized my entire house again that school year. And that's how I started. That's the origination of the 100-day program. The 100-day program now is 15-minute-a-day tasks. Those tasks I was giving were like hours-long tasks, and they weren't very specific. It was like, go clean your kids' rooms, and like, here are all the things you can do to clean the kids' room. Not like, you know, here's how you go through shirts. The 100-day program is very, very prescriptive, educational, task-oriented, very, very, very easy to follow. In the beginning days, it was not that way. I had to go through my own program 3 times in order to get to a more productive state. This is not what I planned on talking about on this podcast at all, by the way. Told you it was story time. Okay, I'm going to go back to time and money. I paint this picture for you, and I know I've told this story before because I'm about to tell you how amazingly awesome and free and easy my life is, and I want you to be grounded in the reality of where I started. No one has a life that I'm about to explain to you that did not put in the time and money and effort to get there. It is not a magical occurrence that you all of a sudden have time and money. It is a purposeful decision. And for me, it was when I stopped prioritizing money and I started prioritizing time. So I'm going to go through the last 5 or 6 years of my life and tell you how I started prioritizing time over money. So December 2011, I decided that I was in charge of my time. And in 2012, after I had gotten through my entire house, it was April when somebody told me I was a professional organizer. I had no clue. I started to realize that my time was worth money. And up until then, the most money I had ever earned was when I was a house cleaner. When I would clean people's houses, I would charge $35 an hour. And people would happily pay that, as they should. Because house cleaners do a great, fantastic job. It's worth it. So when I decided I was going to be a professional organizer, I knew that you had to charge more than you would as a house cleaner. So I charged $40 an hour. And I started my professional organization business. And one of the things I realized there in 2012 was that I did not have many jobs, but the jobs that I had, the time I spent away from my home, I was being paid well for. I wasn't working for $10 an hour, and I had flexibility over my time. I would clean people's houses every other week on the same day and the same time, but I picked a day and time that was good for me from the beginning. I could professionally organize houses and I was earning a good dollar per hour, but I could work that around my kids' schedule. So I was in charge of my time. And then when I gave up time from my family, I was being paid well for it. Now, the other thing that I have embraced wholeheartedly my entire life is this idea of planned neglect. So planned neglect is a purposeful neglection of a task that you know that needs to be done for a certain amount of time and for a certain reason. It's called planned neglect. I heard about it when I was a creative memories consultant. I don't know who coined the term, but I love it. Planned neglect. I decided in 2012 when I was organizing that house, for the first 4 months of the year, I decided that the only thing I would spend my time doing was organizing our house, and then I would worry about making money. I literally would organize our house 8 hours a day. Like if I wasn't driving the kids somewhere or cleaning somebody else's house or doing a home show for my direct sales company, I was organizing. And then when I started professionally organizing in April of 2012, as soon as I would organize somebody else's house, I would be physically exhausted, but I would come home and I would declutter and organize my house more. Like 2012, I was in a cupboard, in the basement, in the garage. I was decluttering something the entire year. It was almost like breathing. What more can I get rid of? What more can I organize? I was so focused on that. And I neglected other things. Like I didn't worry so much about cleaning our own house because I knew that dirt would just accumulate and I could clean it all at once. And if I would clean our house once a month instead of once a week, I could gain like 20 hours to organize our house. So I was purposely neglecting some daily activities in order to get more organizing time in. There are a lot of things. I'm bringing in a time expert in February and going to have her on the podcast. I can't wait for that discussion. But there are a lot of things in your day that you do out of rote memorization, out of habit, out of routine, that you could easily give up for a season in order to make true progress on something else. You cannot do the dishes, the laundry, the driving, the cleaning, the working 9 to 5, and have extra time to do something else. I mean, all your time gets used up. So you have to say, for a period of time, for 2 months, I am no longer going to cook from scratch. We're going to buy pre-made dinners in order to have more time to do this. Or for a period of time, I am going to clean the house every other week. I'll still clean the toilets every week so that I can have more time to do whatever. For a period of time, I am only going to work out 3 times a week instead of 5 times a week so that I have 2 days to do whatever it is. Learn Spanish. I don't know what you want to do, but whatever it is you want to do. Also, I learned early on, even though we were in debt, that paying for time would free up a lot of my time. So I had had a housekeeper earlier, and I have a housekeeper now, someone that cleans my house every 2 weeks. And I've been a housekeeper, so I know what I'm paying for. I've cleaned other people's toilets, and I have people clean mine. Like, this is not a problem for me. When I clean my house top to bottom so that it looks like a housekeeper has been here, it takes no less than 8 hours for me to do it, sometimes 10. It will take the entire Saturday. I will start at 8 or 9 a.m., and I will not be done until between 4 and 6 p.m., and the house will look like the housekeeper has been here. When I hire a housekeeper for anything, anywhere from $30 to $60 an hour is usually what they charge. I usually get an independent one, so I'm paying $30 to $40 an hour, something like that. I can walk around my house, pick up my house, do my dishes, and start the laundry in about 40 minutes is what it takes me to do that. The housekeeper comes. 3 hours later, she leaves, and it looks exactly like the house does when I spend 8 to 10 hours cleaning my own house. I don't understand the math. I just know it's a reality. So one of the very first things that I hired was a housekeeper in my house to buy back 8 hours per week. She comes every other week for 3 hours, and it gives me 8 hours per week to have a housekeeper. This is why I'm so passionate about you guys hiring help, because the time is just amazing. Now, in 2012, in order to save money, I was couponing. I was trying to cook from scratch. I was cleaning my own house. And I was losing all of my time just trying to maintain this house. So hiring a housekeeper gave me extra time. And then with that extra time, what I did was I did more organizing jobs. I earned more money. Now, I love Dave Ramsey, and I follow Dave Ramsey. But what I found in his method that never worked for me and why I was never successful in getting out of debt with Dave Ramsey was that all of the tips that I got was about frugality. And honestly, I'm just not a very frugal person. I try, but it's a lot of work. So couponing and cooking from scratch and cleaning your own house are all frugal means in order to pay off your debt. Our debt was amassing at a rate that I don't care how many meals, I could have cooked meals from scratch for everyone in Cincinnati and not made enough money to pay off our debt. It was amassing at a faster rate than frugality could pay it off. the only way to turn around our economic situation was for me to earn more money. And by earn more money, I don't mean get a McDonald's job. I mean start a professional organization business, earn $40 an hour, and then scale that. So the first 3 years of my business, I organized for $40 an hour, and then I added Carol to the team in the winter of 2012. She started organizing with me. Then I could, you know, charge double for our time because there were two organizers, and I had raised my rates to $50 an hour. So when Carol and I went on a job, we charged $100 an hour. That helped me earn more money. And then eventually, over 3 years, it took me a long time, I got to the point where Carol and Chrissy would go on the jobs without me, and I would charge an hourly rate, and then I would earn a portion of that, and I wasn't even on the job. I needed to find ways to earn income where it did not take my time. I was not trading time for dollars, where I was earning money when I wasn't physically there. That's also why I started the blog in 2012. I knew it would take a long time, but I knew eventually I would be able to sell something in the internet in my sleep and earn money, which is like the 100-day home organization program. When you buy that, I'm not organizing your house and I'm not physically working with you. I do give you my time in this podcast, which is free, and also in the Facebook group and designing the new planner and creating the system. I am an entrepreneur. I come from a long line of entrepreneurs, and entrepreneurs in general look at time differently than 9-to-5 workers do. My husband is not an entrepreneur. He does not understand at all what I do. He's very happy it is successful right now, but his brain cannot compute. It could not compute all the years that I worked for free and didn't make any money. And it also cannot compute this year where I'm making a lot of money and it doesn't seem like I'm working anymore. Like, he thinks like when you work, you earn money. Entrepreneurs are willing to, it's kind of the Dave Ramsey thing, work like no one else and make no money so that later they can earn money when it seems like they're not working. But the work that I am doing now, the money that I'm earning now through the 100-day program, could never have existed if I didn't do the 40 days, do the 40 weeks, do over 1,000 blog posts, do over 200 podcasts, organize, you know, hundreds of homes in Cincinnati. If I hadn't put in the physical time, I wouldn't have the digital product that I sell today. So, where the heck was I on this? Okay, so hiring people was able to multiply my time and also then give me income. So I hired Carol in 2012. I hired a virtual assistant in 2013. I hired Chrissy in 2013. I remember when I hired this virtual assistant to help me with my blog that was not making money, by the way. Was not making any money. I think the blog was costing money. I know for a fact, the first 3 years of my business, if I was not doing in-home professional organizing, I would have had to close Organize 365. But I knew in my head that if I put in the time and I was consistent long enough, that Organize 365 could become an online digital international brand, but it was going to take time. And just like hiring the housekeeper would give me 8 hours a week in my house, hiring a virtual assistant, and now I have Pat, my executive assistant, I actually have two assistants, hiring people in my business, which I love to do, gives me more time. So when I hired that VA, I was able to have her do, I think she did images and Pinterest. I can't even remember everything I had her do. But it was all this stuff like laundry and dishes and vacuuming and cleaning that I was doing in my online business, that I was spending so much time doing those things that I couldn't do other things. Like, for example, I was only writing one blog post per week because it was taking me so long to do everything that goes with a blog post. As soon as I had a VA, I could write three blog posts per week. So I was able to get more content out there so that I could meet more people who might like the ideas that I have. And today, so this podcast that I'm recording for you, I will upload to Dropbox and it will go to three different people, and then magically you will hear it next week. So I have someone who will write the blog post and do all the social media shares. I have somebody else who will do the audio leveling, add the intro and outro and upload it. And then Pat will make for me the newsletter, and I will look it over and I will tweak it, and then we will send it out to you. Oh my gosh, it is so glorious. If I did not have this system set up for podcasting, like when I first podcasted, I did all of those parts except the audio. I've never done the audio. But now that I'm doing this, I could do the Sunday Basket podcast. And I was able to record 8 podcast for the Sunday Basket to start because I didn't have to write all of the show notes. I just do the content. So hiring people multiplies your time and multiplies your impact. What are the most important things in Organize 365 for me? To record the podcast. Like this, how are you going to get the ideas out of my head if I don't record a podcast? And if I'm busy fixing, I don't know, an email funnel and all these other things in my business, then I don't have time to record the podcast, which means you don't get the inspiration and motivation you need in order to go live your most purposeful life. I want you to realize that everything you do, everything worth doing, is going to be a marathon and not a sprint. As you're listening to this story, I think it is very common for us to look at people, for you to look at me and think, oh, wow, she has all of these people producing her podcast for her. That must be awesome. Yeah, there's a price tag that goes with that. Let me just tell you, I'm a little nervous about it. I said to my husband at dinner the other night, I'm like, do you realize how many people I have on payroll right now? He goes, yeah, I try not to think about it, Lisa. I was like, yeah, I hired 5 people in November. I mean, it takes a lot of people to do what I want to do and organize 365 right now. But I also know, as far as I've come in the last 6 years, I know where I want to go in the next 6. And it is really inspiring and fun and amazing. And every time I think about what I want to do in 2018, the first thing I think about is, how do I get more time in order to do that, because the current things on my plate are taking up all of my time. And that new thing that I want to do, like the national convention, which you're going to hear about in a couple of weeks, which is coming in June, I hired somebody to help me with the national convention and I have ideas, but it is going to take some time to plan that. And oh, it's going to be so awesome. It's going to be all about productivity. You want to come. You want to come. It's like June 5th to the 8th or something like that. It's that Friday and Saturday. I don't know, mark it off on your calendar. I'll tell you about it next week or the week after. I am so excited about creating the content for that and what we're going to do. I could see it. I can literally see us. I haven't even been to this hotel, but I can see us in this hotel doing some of the activities that we're going to do, expanding your mind, helping you understand productivity at a different level, actually setting your plan in place so that when you go back to your family, you know what you're going to do. But I can also tell you right now, if I were to chronologically look at my calendar between now and June, I don't know when that gets done. I also don't know when I'm supposed to be writing this book proposal for these editors that I met in October in New York that said, yes, we will, I had two agents who said, yes, we will represent your book. And I had an editor that said, yes, we would be interested in publishing that book. Well, great. All of that is in my head right now. I haven't even written the proposal to send to them. And the proposal is almost a book in itself. When am I going to have time for that? This is why I hired 5 people in November. I hired 5 people in November, 3 people to help me with content, a second admin, and someone to help me with live events. I have spent the month of December finishing up all of the projects that I had for 2017 and training my team. I love to employ people, if I have not said that before. I love to provide jobs. I love to provide training. I love to teach. I love to motivate, encourage, inspire in my employees as well as for you on the podcast. It's just the thing I was created to do, is to bring out of people. I could see in people more than they can see in themselves, and I love to pull that out and bring that out. So I marked off December and January to invest in my current team and the new team that I had hired in order to make sure we're all on the same page, that we all gel, that we all have the same vision. And then you better bet in February, actually middle of January and February, I will be doing a lot of writing the book, writing the content for the national convention, getting ready for, I'm going to be at 2 homeschooling conventions this spring. And I find out next week if I get to speak at those. I hope so. I have 3 speaking topics lined out and I would love to be speaking on those. But I could never be doing any of that if I had not invested the time in, first of all, building the Organize 365 brand and then bringing on team members 1 at a time, and lately 5 at a time, and training, and also investing in my own personal development. Just like you're listening to this podcast, and I'm sure you listen to other podcasts that are expanding your mind for what is possible for you, I do the same thing with coaches, with podcasts, and with going to live events. Live events is the one thing that is really hard for me to do, but whenever I go, it is the most impactful. All right, a couple of thoughts I want to end on. A lot of times we look at money and we make evaluations based on money. I would love it if in 2018 you started looking more closely at your time and valuing your time. Frugality saves you money, but it often costs you time. And thinking in a frugal way, I want you to start being more frugal with your time, who you give your time to, and who you spend time with. Also, you need to level up your mindset. Often, if you want to make a change in your physical environment, in your income level, in your the amount of free time that you have, it involves changing something. You're never going to be able to make a big shift in your physical surroundings, in your mental surroundings, if you don't change something. Listening to this podcast is changing something. It's changing the thoughts that are in your head. And now you're going to ponder that like, oh, I didn't realize that frugality is costing me time. Like, I never equated time and money the way Lisa is talking about time and money. Do I agree with that? Do I don't agree with that? You don't have to agree with it, but it's making you think. And anytime you have to think, then you either become more resolved in your original thought, which is great because now you understand why you think what you think, or your mind is expanded and changed and you think, ooh, that's not how I thought about that before. I wonder how that equates to XYZ. What you are doing is what I call leveling up. And up until 2015 in my business, everything that I had done before in Creative Memories or in some other business, or I had watched my parents do it. I had hired people before. I had hired housekeepers before. I had scaled a business. I had earned, you know, $35,000 a year before. I had done all of those things before. So up until 2015, I was hustling and I was doing it in my own brand, and I was talking about organization, but nothing that I did was so far removed from anything I had done before. After 2015, let me think. Yeah, 2016 was the year where I really started to have to go beyond my sphere locally and the people who I had followed in the past, like books I had read in the past. And in 2016 was when I really started following other coaches and looking at what other small business owners, not just entrepreneurs, like you could be an entrepreneur with an idea and be broke, but a small business owner makes money. And what I wanted to do was finally make money, like finally make more money than $35,000 a year. And in order to do that, I had to look around me and I had to change who I listened to. I had to change who I followed. I had to change who I spent my money with and who I spent my time with. And if the person I was going to spend money with or time and listen to or follow did not have the life that I wanted to have, then I couldn't follow them. And what I found myself doing in 2016, I did grow a lot. I didn't grow exponentially. I probably doubled. I doubled my bandwidth. I just doubled. What I did in 2016, in hindsight, is I found people who were literally 1 or 2 months ahead of me in business, and I followed them, or I used them as coaches. They could have been up to a year ahead of me in business. And it was a confidence booster, like, okay, I have had success. I want to have more success. This is whatever they did in the last 12 months is what I need to do in the next 12 months. Whoever they're listening to, I need to listen to. Whatever they're reading, I need to read. Okay, if they hired that person, maybe I need to hire that person. That grew my confidence in that I was right behind them, and that if I could just keep making the iterations and changes, I could keep growing. What I did in 2017 was 10x. So I took what I did in 2016 and then I went further than that. Okay, who's 5 years ahead of me in business? Who's created their whole industry? Like, the paper organization industry pretty much doesn't exist. It just flat out does not exist. And organizing your paper, the Sunday Basket brand, all the products that are about to come up with the Sunday Basket was a huge leap of faith. When you're making a physical product, like, if you make a digital product, you put out a podcast, you write an ebook, and it flops, you're out your time. You're not out money. When you make physical Sunday baskets that take 12 weeks to be made and shipped and boxed and are ready for sale, and you just signed a contract saying if you don't sell those in 6 months, you own all of those, that is a whole different level of commitment. It's a whole different level of faith in a marketplace that does not exist right now. If you want to organize your paper, you go and you buy binders and you buy folders. That's it. That's all you do. Binders, folders, files. You don't buy a specific box that you go through on Sunday. That's not a thing. It's just not a thing. And I'm creating a whole industry around this idea that you go through this certain box on a Sunday, and then I'll teach you in February how you're going to go through a different one on Friday that's related to your work or your passion project. And I'm creating basically a whole industry with organizers around the US and Canada that are doing physical workshops, and we're doing online workshops. It's going great. And I'm going to write a best-selling book about it in 2019. But I have to be able to, I have moved in 2017. Now it's going to get a little weird, people. From being able to, up until 2017, I focused on my time instead of money, and the money matched my time. In 2017, I'm not really ready to unpack this on a podcast, but I will, maybe in the fall. I moved into a whole different way of thinking about time and money and space. There's this thing called Einstein time. I really don't understand it yet, but now that I know that it's out there, I keep thinking about it. I'll take you back. When did The Big Bang Theory start? It's an American sitcom called The Big Bang Theory. Greg and I watched the pilot when it first came out. I can't remember when that was. And they're scientists, you know, they're Einstein-level scientists. And in the very first episode, they explain quantum mechanics, basically. In an atom, there are electrons. I'm taking you back to eighth grade science. You remember the model you drew? There's a little red nucleus in the middle. I don't know why it's always red. And then there are all these rings around it that are silver. And then we put little electrons on there. They're blue or they're yellow. And the electrons are positively or negatively charged, and each atom has its own number of electrons. Okay, well, there's this scientific thing that I'm not smart enough to understand except the principle of it, where when an electron gains enough energy, it will change rings. It will go from one ring to the next surrounding this nucleus, and that's called a quantum leap. And when you watch it as a scientist, you cannot see the electron move from one ring to the next. It just all of a sudden disappears from one and appears in the next one. And that is called a quantum leap. In 2017, I started looking at people that were 5-10 years beyond me and people who had started their own whole industries, basically. So you're looking at, you know, like, how did Henry Ford change the automobile industry? How did Martha Stewart start her whole brand? How did Oprah become Oprah? Like those people. I started looking at those people. And in every instance, in every single instance, the thing that was common to them, which you may have never heard before, is they could see their success before it actually happened. They could see how whatever they had in their mind played out in reality before it happened. And I started to hear about and learn about the fact that pretty much every single thing you can see and touch today was originally an idea in somebody's mind. Like when Earth was formed, there was not this bed that I'm looking at. There was not the car that you might be driving in. There was not the treadmill that you're running on. At some point, someone said, we should have cars. At some point, Henry Ford said, great, we should have cars, but they should be economical. And the way to make them economical is to look at the meatpacking industry and how they go through an assembly line and do that with cars. There was somebody who was running in the cold and the rain or whatever and said, you know what? If we put one of those conveyor belts, I don't know this true story, actually, but I'm thinking this is what they thought. The conveyor belts that they have somewhere else, and we put it lower to the floor, then people could walk on that inside, and then they wouldn't get wet, but they could still exercise if they lived in an inclement place, like Cincinnati, or they just, for whatever reason, couldn't get outside and walk. They could walk inside on this treadmill. whatever you're looking at and seeing didn't exist before. Do you know what didn't exist 12 months ago? The Sunday Basket Workshop. Like it literally did not exist at all. In February, I said, well, maybe they need a workshop. Do you guys want to come to a workshop? And you filled the workshop. And now, February 2018, we will have a physical Sunday basket. We have two different kinds of slash pockets. We have licensed Sunday basket providers. I'm going to write a book about it. There by February, so just in the next couple of weeks, you're going to find out there are four binders that go with this system. Like, I'm creating a whole paper organization system and industry, because the problem with paper organization is not the physical supplies that are on the market. It's not the fact that we have files and binders. The problem is you could go buy binders today, but you still don't know what goes in a file and what goes in a binder. And how do you know the difference? I know the difference. I just have to figure out, how do I convey that to you? How do I teach that to you? And that's what I've been wrestling with for the last 12 months is, I have time and money now. Now I want to take these ideas that are in my head that don't exist anywhere, and I want to make them come into reality. I want to create. And ultimately, we were all meant to create. We were all meant to have a journey of personal fulfillment. We all have this burning desire inside of us that has been meant to share with the world, to impact others for a greater good. While I've been developing the Sunday basket and testing it out, and you guys are loving it, it's awesome. Thank you so much. I have realized that the mission of Organize 365 has very little to do with you getting your home organized. It really does. It's very little to you getting your home organized. But if you can get your home organized, what you get is you get your time back. And when you get your time back, then you have time where you can sit around and ponder, what is the unique thing that you have in the world that you can share that no one has ever seen before, that only you were created to do? And honestly, the more I think about this, the more I realize that our busyness and the way we spend our time and money is trapping us and keeping us from living our best life, as Oprah would say. Okay, in November, I created a mission, vision, and values statement for Organize 365, and I think this is probably the best time to share it with you. If you're still listening at the end of an hour-long podcast, then you probably care. So I have a mission, a vision, and a values for Organize 365, and these are what they are. So the Organize 365 mission is to inspire, motivate, and teach busy women to take back their home and paper with practical and doable organizing systems and programs that work. Then our vision for our team is that through research, targeted surveys, and data analyzation, Organize 365 will bring to light the organizational needs of the homeowner to shape and develop the discussion about the stuff in American homes through podcast conversations and book thought leadership. As a trusted leader in home and paper organization, Organize 365 will be the go-to resource for busy women, future professional organizers, and home organizational brands and the media. Organize 365 will help the homeowner finally get organized with home and paper organization courses and products that combine teaching and application of practical organization principles. Now, here are our values. We value the power of positivity. Our words, mindset, and actions shape our reality. Organize 365 uses empowering words to shape personal change. We build community. In community, everyone can learn to be organized. Action is easier and happens exponentially. Organize 365 believes organization is a learnable skill. We live life in abundance. Resources are not limited, they are limitless. Through collaboration, Organize 365 connects the right people and resources for maximum benefit and sustainability. And we believe in transformational freedom. As you let go of one thing, you are open to receiving the next. We strive to unlock your life's purpose through the process of decluttering, organizing, and increased productivity. I hope you've enjoyed this very first Lisa story of 2018. And I really encourage you to sit for a minute when this podcast ends. Don't start a conversation. Don't start the next podcast. Take 5 minutes, close your eyes, and think, if I could do, be, and have anything, anything in the world, I didn't have to worry about all of the things I'm currently worrying about. What lights you up? What is the thing that you were uniquely created to do? And I know it's really hard to know that. Okay, I'll end with this really short story. So Sarah Blakely is someone I've been following lately, the Spanx girl. She is adorable, by the way. You should follow her. She is so fun. Follow her on Instagram and follow me on Instagram. Just go to Facebook. Go to organize365.com/Instagram and you can follow me. I am sharing a lot in my Insta stories, just little things that I do throughout the day. So if you're wondering, what does Lisa do throughout the day? Follow Instagram. Those little stories only last 24 hours. So you just keep watching them. I'm kind of addicted. Anyway, Sarah Blakely is another one of these people who was able to imagine beyond herself. She was selling fax machines. She had $5,000 to start her business, but she came from an entrepreneurial family as well. And she knew that she was going to create something that was going to change the world. That was the burning desire she had, but she had no idea what it was. She had no idea what it was. So every time she would get a brilliant idea, she would then ask herself, is this the one? Is this the idea that I'm supposed to pursue? And she had a couple of ideas come to her before Spanx came to her as the idea she eventually went all in and pursued. But when you look at people that you want to emulate and people that you want to follow and people that have the life that you want or people that create things like I'm creating the Sunday Basket program, it is a marathon. They did not just wake up one day and all of a sudden, you know, they have a business. Having a business, being an entrepreneur, creating something, birthing that desire you have in your heart into the world is a laborious process that is so fulfilling. It is so fun. And you may be frustrated and think, well, that's great, but I have no idea what it is. I want you to think about Sarah Blakely, because for years, she knew that she had something great inside of her, but she had no clue what it was. And so as opportunities would be presented to herself, she would say, ooh, is this the thing I've been waiting for? So even if you don't know what it is, I want you to start looking around. There aren't that many coincidences in life. I think there are God incidences, but I don't think there are that many coincidences. So if you hear the same thing 3 times in the same week, that tends to be a trigger for me. Pay attention. Be looking. You have something to share with the world, and time and money are holding you back from living out that life's purpose. All right. I don't know what actionable tips I could give you at the end here, or how to close out this podcast. I just love talking to you guys. I could talk to you all day, but I'll be back next week with another podcast. I actually listed out like the first 6 months worth of podcasts I want to record. And now all I want to do is sit here and talk to you and record podcasts. So I hope you guys are having a great beginning of 2018. This is going to be an amazingly awesome year. And I just want you to embrace that and go with the flow and live your best life. Have a great week.